Let's make use of our kitchen scraps here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. We're learning how to grow tasty produce from clean kitchen scraps and thinking about the eye of the potato that I cut out, those pieces that could be put to use. Do you have experience regrowing celery, onions, beets, lettuce? Join in what's worked, what hasn't. I'm thinking about my unsuccessful avocado pit attempts. 800-642-1234. Katie Elzer-Peters is a horticulturist based in North Carolina, author of 14 gardening books, and her latest one is on regrowing leftover green stalks and seeds. Katie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good morning. So can you first take us on a tour of what's growing on your windowsills or what you have growing indoors around the house?
Well, so generally I keep a fair number of things on hand. I like to regrow some lettuce, like romaine hearts are really easy. Celery stalks, green onions. I would say those are my top three because, you know, you might not get enough lettuce for a whole salad, but you might get a few pieces to put on your sandwich. And so it's just handy to have those around.
About how much time does it take to grow, you know, an optimal size to eat or to put it on your sandwich?
Oh, to grow a leaf?
Mm-hmm.
That really depends. It really depends a lot on what, like your lettuce head. I know that sounds kind of strange, but I do talk a little bit about in the book, the way all of this produce has been handled, treated, stored, et cetera, before you get it. So you never know what's really going on in the plant. It might take for a couple of leaves for lettuce a week or two. That's pretty standard, but I just heard you mention your avocado pit fails. It's not always you. Sometimes it's the plants.
Right, because, you know, produce from the grocery store, it comes usually from these commercial farms and designed to grow a certain way that may make it not the best specimen for regrowing. So what would you suggest we do to get good specimens when we want to try to regrow from our scraps?
I always would advocate going to the farmer's market first. It's and that's because those, you know, beets, turnips, carrots, whatever, they were very likely harvested at most the day before, maybe a couple days before, and are coming straight to you. So they have not necessarily been sitting in a cooler for a long time to slow their growth. They haven't been, you know, treated to not sprout, like what happens with potatoes a lot of times. And so they're already kind of still, I mean, I don't think of plants as being sentient beings, but they're still in that growth mode, like hormonally, physiologically, they're still, you know, they just got yanked. They're probably like, where am I? To anthropomorphize a little bit. And so the farmer's market is always a great place to start. Starting with organic produce is helpful, but not always, you know, it's so funny. I'm like, sometimes they just don't want to grow because they just said they're not sentient, but you know.
What you're saying here really begs the question, of, you know, how the life cycle of a plant works and how you can remind us of what this life cycle looks like. Can you take us into it?
Yes. And I'm going to try to be brief because I could talk about it forever. But for flowering plants, which is most of what we eat, flowering plants, it's chicken or egg, but I'm going to start with the seed. So you have a seed and it sprouts and there are two little leaves inside the seed. Those are the embryonic leaves. They sprout. That's what you eat when you're eating sprouts. They start growing. They grow a couple of what are called true leaves. That's what you eat when you're eating microgreens. They keep growing. They start flowering. And then the flower is where the fruit comes from. So the flower is pollinated or pollinated by an insect or itself pollinates, and the base of the flower swells to become the fruit, whether it's a tomato or an apple. Anything that we eat with seeds in it is a fruit, and then the fruit, you know, matures. We eat it up birds, animals eat it. It might dry out, fall to the ground, and then sprout again. And then you start back with the seed. So that's the general life cycle of the plant. And a couple of important just little botany pieces is that there's two main types of growing tips on the plant. There's the top mm-hmm. of the plant, which is called the shoot. At the very top of that, here's a very technical term, but you guys are smart. I know you can get it. It's called the apical meristem, or the growing tip. And then at the bottom of the plant, the roots, there are growing tips along the roots. And so knowing the life cycle of the plant, knowing where the parts of the plant are that grow mm-hmm. is really important in choosing what you're going to regrow. You really want to look for a growing tip, either a part of the root or a part of the shoot or top of the plant.
We have horticulturist Katie Elzer-Peters pulling out all the stops on the life cycle of a plant as we learn how to be resourceful with kitchen scraps, and she's the author of more than a dozen gardening books. You can join in on using your kitchen scraps and regrowing from them. What's worked? What have you had trouble with? What tips you need? 800-642-1234. Katie, how do you see this approach to kitchen scraps in the larger picture of composting, of the no-waste lifestyle movement?
I think it's really important, a couple of different things. One is that there's much more food to be gained from the food, to be gleaned kind of from the food that we have with very little effort. And it's fun. The other thing that I think it is important for people to know is that depending on what they're growing, eventually they will have wrung everything out, edible really out of it. And then it does go into the compost heap and then, you know, can go back into the garden and part of the cycle of gardening and growing things. But these things that you're regrowing, you're really just mostly wringing a little bit more out of them. Unless you're growing a tree seed or a pit or something that you're going to keep for a long time, eventually it'll go in the compost pile and that's fine. Again, that's not a failure. You've just taken it as far as it could go and then, you know, sending it to its next life as soil.
I wonder, why not just use starter plants instead and send the kitchen scraps totally to compost?
It takes so much, this is sort of my climate, you know, existentialism here going out, but takes so many resources to get this food to us, mm-hmm. especially if it's not coming locally. So if you can, get a little bit more out of that head of lettuce that might've been harvested in California, I think you're just, I mean, it's incremental, but you're doing a little bit of a part, you know, for the planet. Also, it's convenient. I heard you, David. It's also convenient. That's where you get your salad lettuce or get your sandwich lettuce.
Horticulturist and gardening author Katie Elzer-Peters, our guide to regrowing kitchen scraps. Join in on your experimentation with regrowing scraps, reducing food waste through kitchen scraps. 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute with Katie Elzer-Peters here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring this kitchen produce philosophy of don't toss it, but replant it. It is an hour of kitchen scrap gardening on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. My kids have experimented with scraps on our kitchen windowsill real estate, if you will. It's been interesting to see them with their toothpick contraptions and with the seeds. Join in on what you've grown from scraps, what's worked. What do you need more work on? 800-642-1234. Katie Elzer-Peters, horticulturist in North Carolina. One of her books is on kitchen scrap gardening. She's with us for the hour. Katie, I just mentioned toothpicks. What are some of the tools and things that we need to order to start regrowing scraps, you know, from the get-go? What do we need on hand?
Well, one great thing about this hobby is that you probably already have everything on hand that you need. You can just stick the butt end of a celery stalk in a bowl of water and call it a day. So if you have some cereal bowls, or my grandma, I grew up in the Midwest, by the way, I grew up in Indiana, and my grandma and I would go to, you know, garage sales and stuff. And she would always find these little crystal, little cut glass bowls, like for fruit cocktail or something.
Yes.
I often use those. I think I actually use those in my book. So those little bowls, those little like sherbet glasses are good. Vases, bud vases that you get, you know, for Valentine's Day are really great for things like avocados. Toothpicks can be useful as a little bit of scaffolding to hold up what you're growing. The one thing you might not have that I would say comes in handy is some pebbles, and you can get those at the hardware store. I wouldn't necessarily get like aquarium pebbles, but if you get a bag of pebbles at the hardware store, wash them, like just rinse them like you would rinse dried beans or something like that. And just, I mean, a knife, a sharp knife, some like clippers or kitchen scissors. That's really about it. It's mainly just about kind of like cutting the stuff and anchoring it. I guess if you're going to grow certain things, you do. I tend to grow more in water. So then, of course, I'm on the radio live and forget about soil. But if you're going to grow leeks for very much of an amount of time, or you want to try to keep your green onions growing, a pot and some potting soil can be helpful for that, just like a little terracotta pot. It doesn't have to be a deep pot, but any old pot you have growing or sitting around, you can use.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. You know, how do you decide whether you should try this in water versus soil? And then explain how you use the pebbles.
Okay, so water versus soil. A lot of stuff will grow in water. In fact, a lot of things need to grow in water to start with, like sweet potatoes, I could talk for an entire segment about sweet potatoes. This is such a simple process. When they came to me, like, will you write this book? I'm like, how am I going to get a whole book out of this? But, it's really kind of up to you. If you're growing in water, you do want to change the water some, and that can be sort of annoying. And if you're growing in soil, you don't really have to change the soil. But the pebbles, and so most things can be grown and regrown in water. I wouldn't do the root vegetables like beets and turmeric and carrots and all of that in water so much. I would stick more, if you're growing, and that's interesting, going back to our little botany and horticulture talk, roots grow in the soil naturally, shoots or tops grow not in the soil naturally. So that's a nice little bit of a guide. If you're trying to regrow the top of something, for the most part, if you're starting with the top of something, you can grow it in water. So the pebbles are, I use the pebbles as, for things like green onions, leeks sometimes. I just use them as a little sort of scaffolding or a little.
Okay.
Like kind of like you would use soil, but in water. Just okay. Like, stick them in there. You don't necessarily have to use them so that the bottom of the plant doesn't touch the bottom of the bowl or whatever. That doesn't really matter. It's not, you don't need them for humidity. It's just like, put a bunch of pebbles in, fill it with water, like stick your little green onions in and let them grow.
Okay. Let's bring in a caller now. Nina is with us from Trempolo. Nina, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the air. I've been doing this for years.
What have you grown over the years?
Well, right now on my countertop, just yesterday, I finished up some cabbage. So I just stick it in the lid of a of a jar. I just keep things simple and easy. And I just set it there in the windowsill. It's whittled down to the core. I try not to chop off all the buds because that's what's going to regrow. And then all the little buds just regrow, and I have cabbage on my windowsill. Right now I have carrots, cabbage, and I'm regrowing a pineapple top. They're real fun, and I put those in my urns in the front of in the front of our house. And all you have to do is chop off the top of the pineapple and tear off the bottom leaf. Hard to get off if you have weak hands like I do. And then you expose little tiny root buds, I call them. I don't know if they're called buds, but they grow in between the leaves because the plant, I guess, is a bromeliad, and it wants to gather water and debris in its leaves, and then the roots grow into the little leaf spot.
Wow.
So if you tear those off, it like frees the roots.
And Nina, you've successfully grown pineapples then.
Well, not actual pineapples to eat, just because it's Wisconsin, you know. So
okay.
They don't really make pineapples, but they make nice plants.
Okay.
And they're lovely. They're great in the urn.
Let's bring in Katie here. Katie, you know, Nina really going to town on these scraps.
I love it. I love it so much. And Nina's correct. The pineapple is a bromeliad, and they do like to collect little bits and pieces in their leaves for nutrients and water. And they do make fabulous container plants. There's so many things you can do with these plants. I forget about their ornamental value sometimes, although that's part of why I love the sweet potato. But yes, that is such a good point that you can regrow your food, the pineapple, and regrow, let the top grow. And it's a really pretty plant to enjoy outdoors. So thank you, Nina. That is an awesome reminder. And I need to go get a pineapple now.
Nina, are there other ones you grow for ornamental purposes?
Oh, yeah. I try to grow seeds. I've grown a couple of date palms, mango seeds, of course, the avocado. Everybody's got that. But I grow my cherry pits, and I grow, when you get a seed from a citrus plant, a citrus fruit, you don't really know what kind of tree is going to grow from it. You might get a completely different kind of tree. And I've never been able to get one to make fruit, but I have several little citrus trees, and I give them away as presents. Sometimes when I get too many plants, I'll set out a little table at the edge of the road.
Aww.
And put them on there.
It's like a choose your own adventure, Katie, in regrowing scraps. You don't really know what you're going to get sometimes.
I love it. Nina, you just hang with us because you're setting it, you're teeing it up so I can hit it off the tee. yeah, what she said is true. And one of the most fun parts of regrowing, especially from seed and especially fruits, because a lot of what we grow, what we eat, is what's called vegetatively propagated by growers. So if you get a Granny Smith apple, it's that they snipped a piece of Granny Smith apple twig off and grafted it onto a rootstock of a different apple and sold it to us. And then, and that's how you get those kinds of standard expected fruits. But things like citrus, first of all, almost none of the citrus we eat is one species. A grapefruit is a cross between this and that, and a lemon is a cross between this and that, and a pomelo is a cross between this and that. So when you plant the seed, it is true, you have no idea what you're going to get. You're going to get some kind of citrus. It's like if you plant an apple seed, you're not going to get an orange, you're going to get an apple. You just don't know what the apple's going to be like. So it is really fun to see what you're going to get. The other thing I would say, in Wisconsin, to grow citrus and try to get some fruits, I'm sure you move your trees inside, but you can move them inside during the winter, and eventually they should get big. Citrus doesn't have to get too big to produce a fruit. If it's a viable plant, I mean, it could be that it's a little bit of a Franken plant, like you said, Nina, don't know what you're going to get, but It's still fun, isn't it? It's so fun.
Oh, Katie Elzer-Peter is with us, a horticulturist who's written more than a dozen gardening books, helping us out on planting kitchen scraps from the veggies, the herbs we get from the grocery store, the fruit. Join in on growing food scraps that would normally be thrown away or tossed in the compost bin. What do you want to know? What have you tried? What's worked? 800-642-1234. We'll talk more on hybrids, on stem cuttings with Katie Elzer-Peters, our guide, right after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It is Kitchen Scrap Gardening here on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Chirkin. Think about how produce is often the most expensive items on our grocery store list. We are learning about how a number of fruits and veggies can be replanted. Oh, we even haven't talked about herbs. And that could mean crossing some things off the grocery list. What have you grown from leftover scraps and seeds that you'd normally toss? What's worked? 800-642-1234. Horticulturist Katie Elzer-Peters is giving us pointers on DIY kitchen scrap gardening and with us for the hour. So Katie, how do you, there's only so much real estate on the windowsill and we need the light. That is so crucial. How do you feel about grow lights? How do you make sure these, these plantings are getting enough sunlight?
So that's a good question. I don't generally use a grow light unless I'm trying to start seeds to grow outdoors for a long period of time. The good thing about all of these kitchen scraps that we're regrowing is that we're not really trying to get them to put out hundreds of leaves over an extended period of time. So, during the beginning of the pandemic, I put a bunch of bowls on a dresser upstairs at my parents' house. I mean, there was a window kind of high up, but I just ambient light. I was growing lettuce and and everything because I wanted the fresh greens, and I was kind of terrified along with everyone else. You don't have to have a grow light to do this type of gardening. What's on your kitchen windowsill? If it's near a lamp, I mean, it sounds so basic, but you don't really need a grow light. You really just need some space for the most part. The only thing about having a little more light is that the leaves, particularly with your lettuce, will be a little greener because they have more light, so they can photosynthesize, which is involving chlorophyll, so they'll be greener. But aside from that, I wouldn't stress it. The biggest thing about all of this that I always try to impart is don't stress. Just, have fun with it.
If it doesn't work, you can always retry it again. So at what point can you move something you're growing indoors and move it outdoors? And, we're here in Wisconsin, a bit different temperatures than what you experience, mm-hmm. but what would you suggest there about trying to move these plantings outdoors?
Well, and that groan was because it's going to be 92 here today. And I don't think it's going to be 92 in Wisconsin. Again, it depends on what you're growing. But if you're growing something and with the express purpose of planting it outside, like you can plant celery outside. You could try with your lettuce. You can plant your carrots. I think the biggest thing about when to put something outside is more the temperature is it warm enough for it to grow outside, or to make sure that's not too warm? If you plant celery outside in the middle of the summer in the baking hot sun, it will probably just shrivel up and die or turn to mush. It's not, most plants don't like to just go immediately indoors to outdoors, but most of this, once it's warm enough to be planting anything else that you're planting, you can move any of it outside. They're still plants.
Mm-hmm,
They're still just like everything else. The only thing that's a little bit different is the sweet potato, and that is you're gonna plant the sweet potato slips outside once they have roots.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, the carrot tops, they're not necessarily gonna grow a whole lot more roots. You just stick them in the ground out there and let their tops flourish. But sweet potatoes, you're actually wanting to see roots on the little slips that you're growing before you plant those outside.
What about herbs? I mean, that's one of my favorite things about the summer months is growing herbs. But, you know, I always just, you know, plant the starter of that herb outdoors and kind of just watch it flourish. But what is another approach here?
You can root a lot of herb stem cuttings in water and then plant them again. So if you have an herb that in particular, this works a little better if it hasn't started flowering a bunch yet.
Mm-hmm.
If you've grown basil, you've probably experienced that it's once it starts flowering, you almost can't like chop it off fast enough to keep the leaves coming. And that's just because the plant, again, not a sentient being, but hormones in the plant, chemical signals in the plant tell it once it starts flowering, like that's its job. And come heck or high water, it is gonna put out a flower. So with herb stem cuttings, if you can acquire some pieces of herb stems before they've started to flower, stick them in water, let them root, and then you can pot them up. And for any type of plant, if you're moving it from inside to outside, you need to harden it off. This is something we usually talk about if you're growing tomato seedlings or something, but the same applies to anything. Even if, let's say you've rooted an avocado pit and it has leaves and you want to put it out for a summer vacation, you need to start by, say, putting it on a covered area like your porch, even, you know, nestled into like your garage door sill, something. Put it out during the day where it's in a little bit of a shady spot, bring it in at night, do that for a couple of days, then put it out in a little bit more exposed area where it might get some breeze and bring it in for a couple of days. Then you can leave it outside. And it sounds labor intensive, but it's kind of shocking to plants to go from the house straight out into the garden. And so doing that little
easing,
in and out,
yeah, the in and out easing dance.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about kitchen scraps with horticulturist Katie Elzer-Peters, author of more than a dozen gardening books and helping us out on regrowing kitchen scraps. Taking your questions and your tips, 800-642-1234. Katie, you mentioned tomatoes. What is the best way to harvest, you know, a tomato slice for its seeds?
So the tomato is a fun science project, and tomato seeds, if you've cut open a tomato, you will notice that it has that kind of gelatinous goo around the seeds. And so in order to actually harvest your tomato seeds, there's a couple more steps. So I have opened the page to my book because it's been a year or so since I did this, so that I can tell y'all what to do. Oh, there comes the y'all from North Carolina. So you're going to squeeze the seeds out and then put them in a clean jar. The clean is important so it doesn't get moldy. you're going to do what's called ferment them. Just give them a couple days for that goo to break down. After a few days, then you pour it into a sieve, a very like mesh sieve, not your spaghetti strainer, but like a sieve, and run some water over them and kind of just like gently brush them. That should clear the goo off of them, and then put them out on like a piece of paper towel to dry for about a week. And then you should have the seeds that you can, you know, save and plant later, or go ahead and plant, you know, right then. But you need to squeeze the goo and let it sit for a few days, because that's how you get the seeds clean. If you were to just scoop the seeds out and let them dry with all the bits of gunk around them, they might get moldy. You won't be able to store them dry. So that's kind of a fun thing, though, for kids.
And so they wouldn't be as good specimens unless you do this preparation of the seeds. Does that apply to other produce where you would need to just take some care with the seeds in prepping it?
Some of the squash seeds can need a little bit, more cleaning or drying, but tomatoes and tomatillos, which are not tomatoes, but tomato-ish. Those are the only ones that I've grown that you have to do that fermenting with. But anything that has goop on the outside like that, it's worth a try.
And then once you've basically got your seeds all ready and they've gone through the sieve and they've dried out for a week, would you then plant them in soil and watch them grow from there?
Yep. Then you can plant them, or you can put them in a dry envelope and save them, put them in a dry envelope and then put that in a jar and put it in the freezer and save them. So they're all ready. The main reason to get all the goop off of them is so that you can store them if you want to store them, and so that there's no plant material that would attract like fungus or something and make them rot before they can even sprout.
We have gardening author Katie Elzer-Peters helping us to regrow fruits and vegetables at home, giving us pointers on where to start with growing leftover scraps, preparing seeds. Join in on lettuce and celery. Still time to talk about the scraps you've replanted, how they do for you on the windowsill. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more conversation with Katie Elzer-Peters here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about regrowing veggies like celery, like carrot tops, onions from scraps. A manager at the seed company Burpee, who is not a fan of scrap planting, told The Spruce that one upside is that it's a good science experiment for kids because it shows the basic growth cycle of plants, and that is super cool. Join in on Kitchen Scraps, 800-642-1234. Horticulturist Katie Elzer-Peters stays with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Anne now in Madison. Hi, Anne. What are you growing?
Hi, I have grown a leek. I had a leek that I grew in water and stuck it in, and it regrew probably three times before it sort of finished its cycle. And that was kind of fun. But I'm wondering about living lettuce. Is there a way to regrow living lettuce? Can you just simply stick the roots in water? Does that work?
Anne, thank you. Katie.
Hey, Anne, well, good job on growing your leek. I think those are some of the most fun to grow because they're almost guaranteed to grow. So with lettuce, you absolutely can regrow lettuce as long as you have the head. You can't regrow leaf lettuce. You know, what's interesting about here, I'm going to nerd out again. So with a lot of houseplants, you can cut a piece of the leaf and stick the leaf in soil or water and it will grow. Lettuce doesn't do that. I mean, you still have the leaf. Lettuce doesn't do that though. So you need to have the head. So if you've gotten the head of like butter lettuce that was grown hydroponically, or romaine is one of my favorites because it's so easy and you get quite a lot out of it. As long as you have that bottom part where the roots would come out of and you haven't just gotten, you know, the leaves, as long as you have that, same with celery, as long as you have the, I don't know what else to call it. It is the growing tip. It's this tip of the stem is buried within those lettuce leaves. Then you can regrow it. And it's very easy to regrow in water. I tend to kind of, you know, grab it and change the water some because it can get kind of funky. Some of the outer leaves will drop off and again, get kind of funky. You can run it underwater if it's getting gooey. This sounds so delightful, right? But and just stick it in clean water and yeah, and then just let the lettuce do its thing and you will get your sandwich leaves.
And does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to try that.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you, Anne. So what about strawberries? They're, you know, known to have dozens of seeds on each one individually. Is it possible to plant these seeds and have a strawberry plant grow?
Oh, man. So you probably could. That would be another one of those where, so that and like raspberries and other berries would be another one where I would use that process that to like you did for the tomato seeds to get goop out of the inside. But strawberries are almost exclusively vegetatively propagated. The plants are just divided and divided and divided and divided. It would probably take years and I don't know what you would get. So I probably wouldn't do with strawberries.
All right. What about those avocados? You know, we've got these large pits. How do you do that successfully?
Oh, man, the avocado is the holy grail of the sprouting.
Yes.
So with the avocados, first of all, I'm going to run through a few different tips with avocados. One is make sure that you have the right end down. And avocados, sometimes the pits are, they're sort of very even looking, but generally there will be a little bit of a broader side and a little bit of a pointier side. The broader side is the side that should be down. It needs to stay in water and not the bottom. That's where you stick the toothpicks, like stick three toothpicks in. I would stick the toothpicks in about 2/3 of the way up. So like 1/3 of the way from the top. Put it in water, and then it needs to be warm. The water needs, I mean, it doesn't need to be boiling, but I would put it somewhere. I would actually put this one in a windowsill somewhere that the water would stay warm. If it's during the summer, you don't want it near drafts. It just like avocados naturally grow where it's warm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big factor. If the water temperature is cool because it's near a cold window or something, it's not going to grow. If it's winter and you need to keep it warm, you could keep it not right on top of a heating vent, but like sort of near the heat, you know, what dry air just blowing on it constantly, but keep it somewhere warm. The other thing is it can take up to 8 to 10 weeks to sprout. So, don't give up really easily. And then that's really about it. I mean, sometimes it takes a lot of tries. It's just like anything in all the other plants that we've talked about, it can take a lot of tries, but then once it does grow, so it'll start, a crack will start to form around the top and that crack will sort of move down to the bottom of the seed. The root will start to push out from the bottom, a shoot or stem will start to push out from the top, and you can let it grow in water like that for a while. You can change the water. You want to make sure that that bottom third of the seed is always submerged. You don't want it to dry out, and just let it grow. You can change the water. If you change the water, again, not boiling, not like super hot, but at least like room temperature. Don't shock it and put it in cold water.
Tepid, yes.
And then, yeah. And then eventually the pod, the seed part is going to fall off. And at that point, you know, you might jostle it and it falls off and you're like, ah! At that point, you should go ahead and plant it in a little pot. I mean, not tiny, but, you know, maybe a 6 or 8 inch pot. Let it grow for a while. And then if you want to start moving it outside, do that hardening off process, the moving in and out for mm-hmm. a couple of days. And then you can let it grow outside while it's warm and just gradually repot it up. But the biggest thing is, if you fail, keep trying.
All right. Well, along the avocado planting, Nina in Gurnee, Illinois has a story. Nina, hi, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to just tell my story. I was going through chemotherapy and my sister was here taking care of me and she cut an avocado and the seed already had a root in there. So, and I was, you know, not doing well. I just wanted to die. So just seeing that, I thought of it as a survivor and we planted it. And this 3 years later, it's 4 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
And after I found that seed, I took a few more avocados and planted them. So I have them all in one pot with the big 4 foot tall and then surrounded by the smaller ones.
Oh, Nina, so, I love you sharing that story. Thank you so much. And Katie, you know, how beautiful to be able to grow as Nina goes through chemotherapy.
Yes, Nina, I love that story. And I love it so much because it showed that it was something I'm like sitting here tearing up. Okay. I'm going to try not to cry. How just a simple thing. This is not rocket science. It's very, it's something you can do really no matter what's going on in your life, and that you're able to take that tremendous amount of just hope and satisfaction and accomplishment. I love it so much. Thank you so much for sharing that.
We have less than a minute left, but you had mentioned leek is a really great specimen for newbies. Anything else that we should try if we haven't done this before?
Leek, green onions, lettuce, all great. And then my favorite, the sweet potato, stick it in some water, let it grow some roots. It'll grow those slips through the top, break them off, stick those in water, let those grow roots, and then plant them outside. They're so fun. All of those four things are really fun and almost guaranteed success.
Oh, Katie, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Katie Elzer-Peters is a horticulturist in North Carolina. She's the author of 14 gardening books. Her latest one is called No Waste Kitchen Gardening and talking about those kitchen scraps. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.